And I want to thank, on behalf of all of us, Paul Casey, for having us here and for making all this possible tonight. It's really good to be here. Thank you. So I'm going to read a selection of poems, some from my book, some recent poems, some of them quite recent. A few short poems, which are 10-liners, actually. They're miniature sonnets that I've called sonatinas. I'll read three of those. The first one is the title poem of the book. The book is called Infinite City. The infinite city extends in every direction. There are boulevards, avenues, galleries, lanes, canals, gateways, courtyards, corridors, stairs and steps, intricate half-lit chambers. There are no exits. The passages lead inward into density and madness and out towards complexity and shape, or the reverse. From above it is a never-ending labyrinth. From beneath, a spectacular sky, a fluid allegiance of light, shadow, sound, movement. From within, an endless library of maps, unfolding time. The Golem. A golem in Jewish folklore is an artificial creature, human, created by magical means, Kabbalistic means, shall we say. I walk among you breathing clay. Everything I touch is smeared with red earth. You who created me will not easily forget the day your computations and your magic gave me birth. I shall fashion my earthen generations after my own kind. We will conquer your vanity, transform you for your longed-for dispensation of harmony and bliss. But know this, the joy of paradise will demand your soul for the new sanity. Whom we would make sane, we must first destroy. Art. Having put the final touches to his landscape and remembering Van Dyck and Mary Poppins, the tortured painter left the windows, ate the onion dip and drank his two last coffees, typed up a sorry note, retyped, tuned his guitar, checked the level of lotion in his jar, jotted down a poem on what depression is, took a running leap and rebounded with a jolt. He'd forgotten he was an abstract expressionist whose landscapes lacked a vanishing point. Narcissus. In the end, of course, he got married to himself. A civil ceremony, nothing too glib. A friend or two, a reporter from the Mirror. The odd flame. The odd flame from the past. A waiter with icy water, his watery parents a little perplexed, looking around, confused, because no engagement had been announced. The celebrant was vague. Her words left an eerie echo. She quickly left. Nobody spoke. At last he escorted himself into the bridal suite. Nervous, a little beery, he sat there blushing on the edge of a single bed. Next one's called Next Day the Weather. Well, it will be in a minute. Okay. The next day, the weather changes. Clouds the shade of ash and honey stretch the strings of the sky, are echoed in purple chords of thunder. A gusty rain transcribes oblique parabolas to lash the mushroom chimneys, the satellite dishes. Our room high above the avenue of the commemorations trembles like a tank after each sizzled flash traces its nervous network on the ceiling of our thoughts. You laugh, you weep. I pace the corral of an open page that refuses to turn. The words swirl their tumbleweed before my eyes. Who can tell and why? Somewhere in this city, a poet splices the penultimate line into the masterpiece he will never write. A magician behind his Steinway is shaking numbness from his sleeve. His fingers squirm to imprint their pain. Down in the street, a garbled figure stumbles into a rain-hatched archway. A stray hound examines the air. And you, outstaring the window, waiting for doubt and the downpour to settle in. The Sky Tree. On an island just south of the future, we discovered a tree that grows downward from the sky. We could not conceive in what manner of sky soil its roots might be set, nor how it could stay suspended thus, scarce beyond the reach of urchins and adventurers who would surely have tried to scale it out of sheer impudence or to unearth its secret, lost in clouds of the forbidden past. Beneath its broad inverted canopy, children would gather mushrooms and paint magic scenes with rainbow colours pressed from iridescent globes that lay about, ripe droppings of the sky tree, as it was called by the wagoners who would trundle by delivering candlesticks to the village across the river. Their voices lit up in reciprocal greeting when we waved excitedly, and they would dismount with tender anecdotes of homelands beyond the hills. One, especially, used to steal spirited glances at my precocious sister, who, not unaware of her fragrant allure, would puff out her cheeks and strut about under the sky tree's disapproving gaze. Her antics pitched the yokel into such gusts of laughter and desire that once, as he chased her through the filigrees of his own shadow, his soul, trailing in the breeze, caught the tip of a sky branch, swaying sternly as if to protect the virgin, and the great tree gave out a shudder, so regretful that the earth grew dim under a carpet of cascading memory, and we could swear the sky itself was about to tumble. Humility. For months, Mozart has been so crucial, I haven't played him. The winds filibustering the house have heard the chimney crackle and the paint strained, while the old obsessions went ignored. What was the point? One evening I flipped the LP of the A major, K488, and the slow movement lacerated my defences all over again. I squinted beyond the buglier on the fence line and thought I could discern vast citadels circling the horizon, and it was almost a joy that swept its andante through the sad molecules of my imaginings. But just then, a magpie alighted on the lawn, dragging a shadow behind it as the sky turned a molten gold and a storm broke from the west. The disc had ended. I had no recollection of having heard the Rondo finale. And I sprang to the phone, jangling churlishly, to tell me you were gone. Music is like that. It knows. It brought to mind what you had shown me on the Baltic coast under the lighthouse, twirling a miniature sailboat of souvenir amber between thumb and forefinger. You pointed to the tower and the encircling gulls, and look at them, you said. They love the lighthouse. It teaches them the humility of flight. I read a poem called Some Precepts of Postmodern Mourning. It's mourning with a U. There must be a body, but there needn't be. The body must be remembered with some fondness. There must be at least two eulogists, and a third must have been detained by traffic or a death, and the service must proceed. Sex must be mentioned, but preferably not, except at the wake or the seance, when most words are permissible again. On second thought, this precept needn't apply. But at least one text must be read from, preferably composed by the body and significant. It must include expletives, but needn't do so. Everyone must look dignified and important, or at least significant. Move deliberately but not heavily. Smile but laugh once only. Black must be avoided except in socks and sunglasses, which must be worn during the service as well as outside afterwards. There must at least be a reference to Celtic poetry or Jewish ancestry, and both testaments must be drawn upon. Someone must remark, "I still can't believe it." Then, "Yes, I can." And someone must respond with a philosophical but solicitous lift of an eyebrow. And one of the mourners must be overheard to whisper, "I'm surprised she didn't come, though it doesn't surprise me." It must be noted that the body could never suffer fools gladly. And someone must observe how much he or she is only now learning about the body. Someone must say at least one Italian thing, either to the mourners or to the body. But a French or German or Latin or Spanish or Sanskrit thing will do, or a thing in any other accredited language, provided the expression is significant. There must be no public mysticism, though there may be, and coffee or white wine must be served afterwards. Someone needs to be squinting tears, and preferably a large man in a double-breasted suit with a crimson kerchief protruding rudely, coupled with a pallid pusillanimous niece with a weak chin and beatific smile nodding with significance. Reincarnation must be accepted by at least half the mourners, but not mentioned. Though strange omens and premonitions over recent weeks must be seen as significant in retrospect. The body must be understood to be pleased with the service, the simple dignity and grace of the occasion, the baroque cantata, the words, the weather. Everything must be just so. Everything must be significant, though in the end it needn't be. Later, this in itself must be acknowledged as most significant of all, or at least put down to the quintessential irony of death. So having said all that, you should know what the dead do. Certainly they do not ride the ghost trains or scale the cliff tops deliberating Dante. They have lost their taste for old Gothic or the peerless glaze of the Renaissance. And they soon disremember the sinfonias or motets in memory's overtones, while the fading watermarks of their existence or its lingering traces they cling to keep receding like some flimsy recollection or a pen that must erase as it writes. And they have noticed a strange deliquescence, or it seeps about them like an ether, that they no longer recoil from one another or peer beneath bridges in disquiet, no longer need resemble their unlikenesses or adjudicate the maxims they live by. They grow heedless of hurt and pleasure or the multicolored stations of the mind, having shed the fair ground of nightmares, or bolted, reawakened from their slumber. And the impulse to craft and curiosity, or the itch to scrape at the unbearable because suddenly spilled, is jettisoned, or transmuted like quicksilver to sand. So at last they can empty and be copious, or encompass the silentness of attuning to their new dispensation, which is eternity, or time's true and durable meaning. Thanks. And I'll finish with a couple of prose poems from my most recent book, Autographs. The first one is called V. T-H-E. We are the ones who watch, who notice all. We shelter in the furthest reaches of your sky and in the deepest hidden spaces of your heart. You do not know us, yet we are as one with you. Those of you who reflect might call us God, though we are no such thing. Mostly you have no inkling we exist, yet you conduct your days mostly according to the guesses and the signs you sense from us on the dim screens of your diurnal selves. And though you feel our presence sometimes through the mist or there behind the surface of your glass, you turn away. Alone at night, you glimpse the shade of us. We are the indistinct companion in your dream, the voice you cannot place, the strange reply. We are the citizens of the town you conjure, the street you recognize, the dwelling, part familiar yet bizarre. We are the staircase you tumble down, the room pulsing with unremembered secrets, the wade in slow motion down the endless hall. We are the longed-for land of might-have-been, impossible reunion, the place where every memory comes back to life. We are the sorcery you have hungered after, the intersection of the then and then. Yet we are now, there is no other time. We are the ones who watch, who notice all, who make all possible. Sometimes, caught unawares, a shiver passes and you pause, perplexed. Do not concern yourself. We understand who you are. And finally, supplication, which is my particular fantasy about time flowing backwards. Let the film turn before it touches the moment. Let the motorcade stop, drift backward down the plaza. Let the jetliner freeze meters short of the tower, flow back out of the frame like a toy wing at the sling's limit. Let the black plumes billowing from the edifice be re-inhaled to unmask the blue. Let the bullet thread with a thud back in the barrel crouching in the gateway. The victim clinch his scarf and vanish within. Let the high sniper crawl from his perch, crabble back down the fire escape. The drunken messenger lift his stone boot from the pedal, his machine veer backward from the X. Let the siren's wail diminish again. Let the smoke be sucked back, the ovens clang open. Let the battalions pause on their relentless march, the battleships heave about, the bombs plunge upward. Let the tanks unroll, let the stormtroops halt, pummel grotesquely backward down the boulevard. Let the proud man-children in camouflage watch their rifles fetched from their palms. The proud, inflamed, barefoot boy-children receive their stones flung back in their fists. Let fists unfurl, let hearts, let every prayer open with amen. Each breath be the ending of a prayer without words. Let words unravel, and all manner of thoughts and things done and undone. Let the moment be immaculate and true, untouchable as a dream. And let the days unfold and fold back again, so that as we awaken and begin to forget the dream, we remember the moment. Thank you very much.